You're listening to the Superpod HeroCast, a Night Shift Radio production.
I just want you to know.
Yeah.
I pregame this motherfucker.
Usually that's my move.
Oh, I pregame hard. I had a nice cold brew Jameson with a little maple syrup in it. I am feisty and ready to rip this motherfucker apart. Oh, hello.
Hello.
And welcome to the Superpod HeroCast.
Guys with beers talking about movies with capes.
Episode 136. I'm Casey Ryan.
And I'm Todd Panic.
And we watched The Guyver.
Yeah, this great movie you pulled for us. The Guyver.
That you pulled. To quote Stephen Sondheim, but it isn't my fault. I just pulled that movie. More paraphrasing. Hi, everybody. I'm a little tipsy.
Yeah.
Because it was the only way I was going to make it through this motherfucker of a movie.
Now, when we watched, what did you drink? What did you drink vodka with? Suicide Squad?
Suicide Squad.
Okay.
Suicide Squad.
I feel like you weren't that surly for that, even though you had started with vodka.
This is whiskey. I'm on whiskey. So okay, whiskey makes me surly because I'm Irish.
Okay. All right. And there's
specifically, this is Jameson. Well, look it. I'm 53% Irish. Anyone has a problem with me making that comment, come at me. I'm fucking Irish.
Okay. And I feel like you're really leaning into a stereotype. I'm Irish and I'm drinking. And if you got a problem with that, let's fight. Is what I just heard.
Like Patty from Family Guy, big whoop, won the fight about it. Yes, I am Irish, and then the rest of me is a little Scottish.
Okay.
A little Welsh.
All right.
A little English. We don't really talk about how the English got in there, because it wasn't
Prima Nocte.
Prima Nocte.
And Norwegian.
Oh, all right. Interesting. Okay.
Because the Vikings became the Celts, so.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah.
All right. I think I said that in a previous episode.
I think you did, actually.
I think I've given this... somebody just fast-forwarded 10 seconds, like, Jesus.
Yeah.
We understand, Casey. Really you drunk. Did Ancestry DNA.
Yeah.
I'm not drunk. I'm feeling good. I'm feeling better than I did when I watched this movie. Todd, you watched this movie today.
I did. So a little peek behind the scenes. Sometimes if I have a digital copy of the movie... The video player on my laptop is VLC, very popular program, and VLC gives you the option to change the playback speed. So, may have watched this movie at 1.5 because
as you should.
Oh my God!
How I long to have 1.5 to watch this movie at, because this movie made Howard the Duck look like Paddington 2.
Yeah. So you said it in a text to me last night that this is the worst movie we've ever watched on this podcast, and it is. Boy, it's certainly in the contender. If you had a battle royal,
there's no contending. they all like line up, and this movie comes up, and people are like, nope.
Like the third Crow movie.
I would watch the Toxic Avenger before I'd watch this movie again.
Yeah, that's true. I would too. Okay. All right.
Yep. That's what makes it. What would you watch that we've already recorded?
I can't believe and I'm it's about everything. To say this. I would watch Howard the Duck before I watch this again.
There we go.
I hate myself for saying that, but it's true.
Winner, winner, chicken dinner. This movie fucking blows. And the only way we're going to make it through this,
that's right,
good sir, is by doing the thing we do with every episode, because we are
guys with beers talking about movies with capes.
What are we drinking?
Boy, you brought it in. It was a little
I got there.
A little rough
on
the approach, but yeah, all right.
Sometimes you got to be a little rough on the approach.
The tower,
as long as you stick the landing, sir.
The tower made you come around again here and give it another shot. But we're on the ground.
It's a negative, Ghost Rider.
All right, so This beer comes to us like so many of our beers from our good friends at Branching Out Bottle Shop over in Township 5 here in Camillus, New York. Great beer selection. And I actually went in with a specific beer in mind, which they were out of. But I but I grabbed another beer from the same brewery, and it fits just as well. So one of the most memorable things about this movie are the ridiculous rubber costumes that the bad guys, the Zoonoids turn into. And they're a variety of monstrous looking creatures that
and racist.
Jimmy J.J. Walker is kind of leaning in on some racist stereotypes. Many of them appear to be, you know, originally some kind of an animal, various things. And boy, if you've never seen Kings County Brewers Collective, if you've never seen their cans, it's worth going over to their website, taking a look. The artwork is so cool. We've talked a couple places. We've talked about a couple breweries in the past that have cool artwork. Collective Arts comes to mind. But the artwork for KCBC is really much right in the comic book, comic strip kind of vein. And this one's no exception. So KCBC, Kings County Brewers Collective, began when a motley crew of Brooklyn-based brewers decided to join forces to create a new brewery and tap room for beer drinkers across New York City and beyond, kind of like Voltron, except for beer.
we've done Kings County before, and I've always loved that they quote out Voltron.
Absolutely. So the beer we're drinking tonight is one of their West Coast style IPAs, and in honor of all of the monstrous creatures that the Zoonoids appear to be, we are drinking their Venomous Villains beer. So this beer pours bright copper gold in the glass with rocky white foam, notes of ripe stone fruit, pithy tangerine, grapefruit bitters, and earthy resin. Brewed with an abundance of our hand-selected Mosaic, Amarillo, Simcoe, Centennial, and Cascade. Those are the hops. Explosive flavor, punchy bitterness, and a snappy finish. It's always more fun to play the villain. But the most important thing about this beer tonight, to help us get through this horrible movie, it is 6.9% alcohol by volume.
Hey! So I'm going to be feeling real good by the end of this.
Yeah, you are.
Oh, better than I did about watching this fucking movie.
It has got some aggressive head, so...
Oh, boy, it does. I'm just going to leave that
be. Just going to leave that be for a second.
Sometimes you just got to let the head happen.
It's throwing a great aroma right out of the glass.
I did get a big snort of it, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yes, please.
All right.
All right.
Ready to tackle this?
Cheers, my friend.
Cheers, buddy.
First, that is a fucking delicious beer. Let's start there.
Yeah, that's good.
Second, hey, speaking of friend, apparently social media platform Redacted let us know that we've been friends for 15 years. That doesn't seem right.
I definitely remember being at your 40th birthday party. Was that upstairs at Nibsy's?
Well, that would be my 30th birthday party.
Your 30th birthday party.
That's my 40th was when we watched Empire Strikes Back.
That's right. Oh, my gosh. My
30th was up at Coleman's.
Okay, yes. Upstairs at Coleman's, right?
Yeah. Yep.
And I feel like we were acquaintances at that point. We had
That was 13 years ago. Technically 12, almost 13 years ago, because I'll be 43 in like a month.
I mean, it's around that time. I've only been back in Syracuse about 20 years.
That just seems so wild. Yeah, I was like, wait, but.
But, you know, I knew of you before that. Like, I'd seen
Glengarry Glen Ross was 15 years ago. Oh, I'm sorry. There's no refunds for Throne anymore. We have no money left.
That's right. I mean, it's around that time, but yeah, that was a great little.
I was like, oh, cool. Friendiversary. Wait, what?
Yeah.
15? That doesn't seem right.
That's crazy. But, you know, buddy, here's to 15 more. At least.
And then we're done?
Yeah, that's it.
Then, 30 years, fuck you.
That's right.
Sorry, Amy. I guess our friendship is over, too.
Oh, no.
Shout out to the great Amy Blyer Long, runner of CNY Central Magazine here in Syracuse, New York. She did a great article on us a couple of years ago.
Yeah, that was cool.
Specifically this podcast, and she is now editor-in-chief.
Oh, that's awesome. That's awesome.
Yeah,
super nice lady.
I keep saying to her, please tell me somebody calls you chief. No, nobody calls her chief. I was very disappointed.
Unacceptable. At least tell me there's a newsroom and she can, you know, like pop her head out the door and yell, Olson, Kent, get in here.
You went Olson, I went Kent.
Yeah, that's fine. That's
or Parker. No, Parker. We wanted to be a good editor
that's
in
right.
chief.
That's right. That's
we wanted to be Perry White.
That's right. So once again, our friends over at Branching Out Bottle Shop, do not disappoint, bringing us fabulous beer selections all the time. Go check them out.
It's true.
And, you know, Casey, we have a portion of the, or a segment of our regular routine that we haven't done lately, but you...
Oh, do we have a reshoot?
Reshoots.
Well, you reshot yourself.
Oh, no. What did I do?
You Help were talking last episode, and when we watched
what happened
one of
to
the
Eric
greatest
LaSalle?
Superhero movies ever. Yes. Apparently, we were talking about what happened to Eric LaSalle on ER, and you found a reshoot for yourself.
Apparently, Eric LaSalle now writes mystery novels. Good for him.
Yeah. Amazing. Yeah.
That's fucking wild. Like, I am now deep into, for those keeping score, I am now incredibly obsessed with watching ER. I watch it while I do the dishes. I watch it while I'm getting ready in the morning. It's on all the time in my house. It is my sweet joy right now, and I am deep into season 5.
All right. So if
the last time we talked, I was in the middle of season 4 when we did Logan, which was, if you're keeping score at home, 1 week ago.
All right. So Casey, if someone wants to weigh in on their opinions of ER or their opinions on anything else that we're going to share today, what's the best way for them to do that?
Well, I mean, the easiest way is to email us at superpodherocast@gmail.com because
only Cap writes letters.
Tony.
So let's...
go ahead.
No, I was gonna bring. Listen,
I may be a little tipsy, but I'm focused. Don't worry. I was going right into the next segment.
Yep.
Which is, of course, Almost Cast.
Sure.
I got one.
Okay.
And then you can do the banana stand.
Great.
We may need to add the drop of.
There's always money in the
banana. There's always money in the banana stand.
I like it. I like it when he can't believe that they burned down the shack. He's like,
yeah,
there's always money. I like the lower key, quieter.
Listen, editor's choice. This is your part of the episode. True. Just put one of them in there, my All friend.
Right. So then right now you're going to hear.
Always money in a banana stand.
Oh, no, not yet, because we're going to do Almost Cast. Please, go ahead.
But also, you can cut all that, us talking about it. Like, let's make this a tight episode.
All right, we'll see.
Or not. This may be in there. Hello, audience. So one Almost Cast. Considered. I always love considered.
Sure.
Because they were sitting around like, well, what about... Like, he may not have read, he may not have auditioned. Who knows? But Stephen Baldwin was considered for the role of the Guyver, which would have made this movie worse.
Okay.
Now, I put this note and was thinking about it today. I watched this about 3 days ago. And I was like, and I somehow mixed it in my head that it was Adam Baldwin. And I was like, you know what? Adam Baldwin, political views aside.
Sure.
Might have made this movie a little better. But nope. Stephen Baldwin would have made it worse. The generic 90s actor that they got to play this part.
So that
was serviceable.
Jack Armstrong, who has 45 writing credits, last one being one episode of a TV series, Mr. Mayor. Oh, that's one with Ted Danson.
Yeah, with Ted Danson. Yeah, it's the thing he did after The Good Place.
Yeah. So one episode of that. Couple credits in 2020. Looks like a couple of films. One of them credited as male neighbor, so I'm guessing not big roles. But I don't see, I'm just, you know, some TV stuff that you've definitely heard of. Scandal, Bones, Grimm, Days of Our Lives.
Yeah. He was on Friends.
Was he?
Go back that far. Yeah,
he was Friends. Bob. He was Bob. I don't know who's Bob. Tell us who Bob is.
Bob was the person that, I think it's a person that Rachel date, or not Rachel, that
Monica.
Thank you. Monica dated that... like gave this line about how he hadn't had an erection since he had left his wife and they slept together. And then he found out that this is like a thing that he does. I think that was Bob. I may be wrong.
So he was a creep.
I feel like.
Got it. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Kind of like in this movie, like halfway through this movie, I was like, are we supposed to be rooting for the Guyver? He seems a little creepy.
Oh, I could not have cared less. It would not have been possible for me to have cared less. I love that you had that thought.
Yeah, I clocked exactly where I stopped giving a fuck about this movie.
Oh, so for me, it starts with the opening. Oh, okay, hang on. We're not there yet.
Yeah. We'll get there.
So some production notes. And I think, I want to be fair to this. This is based on a Japanese manga, right? Which is
never goes well.
Yeah, I got to agree with that. So it's a Japanese manga, the English title, Bio Booster Armor Guyver, or simply Guyver. It was a series that was written and illustrated by Yoshiki Takaya. Runs from 85 to 97, then kind of off and on again from 99 to 2016. So I want to be fair. I will admit that neither anime nor manga are things that my geek space go to. I think we've talked about that.
Right. We at the beginning of the season, did My Hero Academia, and we were just like, this is not penetrable for me. And if you enjoy manga, if you enjoy any form of, Japanese animation entertainment, good for you. It's just, it's impenetrable for Todd or I.
Correct. And
I watched Pokemon for a hot time, but it just, I couldn't do it.
Yeah. Well, so the specific point I really want to make sure that we kind of draw a line on, neither one of us have any exposure to the original source material. That might be a great manga. Neither one of us know. Neither of us.
I'm going to guess yes, because we seem to in America take great foreign entertainment and make shitty versions of it here in America.
it's the American way. Yes, I think you're right with that. I think that's entirely fair. So we're not criticizing manga. We're not criticizing anime. We're not criticizing the source material. We're talking specifically about this movie, which is a hot steaming pile of dog shit. Holy cow. Now, I was trying to think back today. I did have some early exposure to, and there's got to be a term for it. And I wonder if our buddy Josh or one of our other listeners might know, but this style of serialized storytelling, usually on TV, Japanese, lots of, very exotic costumes and stuff. Early on when we first got cable, so that must be like either the very end of the 70s or maybe it was early 1980. I seem to remember watching on one of the channels, Ultraman. Did you?
I watch Ultraman. Yeah.
Okay. And I got to be honest with
wild.
You, me and my brothers, we watched Ultraman. I mean, we didn't seek it out, but if it was on, we would watch it. So,
same.
I was like probably 8 or 9 or 10. So, I'm not sure how that would hold up today, but this is very, this movie is so reminiscent to me of the Power Rangers series, which I never watched, but my two youngest loved. There's gotta be perceived value in that because there's so much of it made, right? I mean,
look, I watched the shit out of the Power Rangers. I will admit I'm probably too old to have been watching it, but hey, have you seen a picture of Amy Jo Johnson? She's fucking hot. The Pink Ranger, the original Pink Ranger.
Okay. Oh yeah.
She's also Felicity's roommate on Felicity when she went to college.
Oh, another show.
She was on Flashpoint. She's been in some stuff. She will show up eventually on this podcast when we are not forced. I think we're gonna have a good time. She makes a cameo in Power Rangers.
I'm not gonna lie, I'm not looking forward to that, but I know it's in there. So
it's not terrible. We got Decker, how do you say his name? Billy from Stranger Things is the Red Ranger.
Oh.
So at least we got him and the woman who played Jasmine in the live action Aladdin. She's good too.
Okay.
And what's her face from the Hunger Games is there too?
Billy Hargrove. I didn't know that. He was Oh, he's in the movie. I'm sorry. I'm thinking like the original series. Got it. He's in the movie. Dacray, Cade, Montgomery, Harvey. Yeah.
Yeah, he's good. Zordon is fucking Bryan Cranston.
Which is great because he was a voice in the original. Mm-hmm.
That's why he did it. American, yeah.
So again, there's clearly connective tissue to those. Sure. I mean, Ultraman came out in 1966. Holy shit.
Mm.
It had movies, TV shows, books. I mean, it's a thing.
It's a thing.
It's clearly a thing. But in any event, this movie, based on that manga, so the creator of the manga, Yoshiki Takaya, gets a writing credit, of course. The other writer is John Purdy. He has writing and directing credits. I'm not going to list them because, frankly, I hadn't heard of any of them. Nothing you could really point to. The director, there's two guys that share the directing credit. So the first one, Screaming Mad George,
is always a good thing when there's this.
He is a special effects effects artist, makeup director, mainly has effects and makeup credits, but again, directed some stuff. Not going to share it. If you're curious, go look it up. I hadn't heard of any of them. The other gentleman, Steve Wang, is a producer, special effects guy, director. And again, like you go through the filmographies and you're kind of going, nope, nope, nope. Haven't heard of that one. Nope. So.
And if you look at the pictures, you're like, oh, that looks terrible. Oh, that looks terrible. But this is like a movie I would be at my local video store and see and go, hey, based on that cover art, nope.
Yeah, I mean, this is a movie that when my kids were younger could have been like, if I'm flipping channels, like visually it's interesting. If they weren't scared by the monsters, the Zoanoids, it's a kind of thing where visually, you know, it might occupy kids just because it's something interesting to look at. But I'm not picking this movie.
No.
And then finally, what you like to refer to as the banana stand.
There's always money in the banana stand. No touching.
I could find a budget for this movie. Couldn't find box office figures. And I searched.
Surprising.
All over the place. Shocker, yeah. but this movie, released in 91, has a budget of $3 million. If you convert $3 million in 91 to 2024, it's a conversion factor of 2.2. So that's a $6.6 million movie.
Still, there are like 50 Zoanoids in this movie. I thought this was going to be like a $10, $12 million budget.
I mean, they're rubber suits.
I still fucking hate this movie, and none of the lip flaps match up. The gyros are like the cheapest gyros you can buy to make the mouths move.
Mm-hmm.
But I am actually impressed.
Okay.
Does not change my thought process or anything on this movie, but I am actually impressed that the Zoanoids look that good at $3 million. Good for them. For them for finding the budget. Yeah.
Fair.
This movie still fucking sucks. Fuck everybody who made this movie. But, wow. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, and speaking about the production, so I'm reading right off the Wikipedia page for the Guyver, the movie entry.
Oh no.
Oh, you know, it's interesting. You know, I note it as interesting. So Bandai and Hero Communications approached Screaming Mad George to do the effects work for the film based on his work in A Nightmare on Elm Street 4, The Dream Master.
Oh, okay. That makes a lot of sense.
Mm-hmm. And there are some cool effects. When the Guyver is killed early on, that whole layers of melting effect. What's that?
Spoilers.
Yeah. Yeah. Sorry if I spoiled this fine piece of film, everyone. there's some cool practical effects in there that reminded me of when it's not Balak explodes. Toth, the Nazi that grabs the headpiece and gets burned into his
Toth.
When he sees inside the
and his face melts.
The arc, yeah. It's that same kind of cool effect of layering of colors and stuff. But so George agrees to direct it on the condition that he could direct. I'm sorry, he agrees to do the special effects work on the condition that he could direct it. And he brings along with him producer Brian Usna and fellow effects artist Steve Wang. So George and Wang completed the movie's principal photography in 5 weeks, beginning in October of 90. They shot on locations in Simi Valley in Los Angeles, and the two began directing side by side before splitting up into separate units, with Wang responsible for handling the majority of the film's action scenes. George said of the production, "The animated version of Guyver is a lot more serious and meant for adults. It had a lot of gory violence and adult themes. As we got into script development, we realized that with the budget and schedule we had to shoot the movie, we'd probably be better off making it for a broader audience like a PG-13. So
weirdly, this movie, we will not be doing Guyver Dark Hero.
We will not.
We've already said that last episode, but this is one of those rare instances where it goes from a PG-13 to an R. Guyver Dark Hero is R-rated.
R-rated, got it.
And is much darker. But I think, I was going to save it for the end, but this is the perfect time to say it. This movie, and yes, audience, I'm bringing it up again. I really want it to be our summer movies. This is Gremlins and Gremlins 2 at the same time. And I think that's why I hate this. This tries to be serious at times.
Yep.
But it's also goofy with fucking Jimmy Walker looks like fucking one of the gremlins from Gremlins 2.
He does. He looks like quasi-racist urban gremlin. Is that a fair way to describe it?
Yeah.
With like gold chains in monster form, right?
We're not going to get into it, so I'm just going to say it now. Aside from letting us know who they were, I don't understand why when they transformed into Zoonoids, suddenly, like, a marker was left, like Jimmy Walker's Africa necklace, and it's Jeffrey Combs' glasses,
right?
And just like all these things,
and
just
made me go. Webster, the woman, Webster's tits or Weber,
yeah.
I mean, it's just bizarre, yeah. Wolf, was that a wolf creature she turns into?
Like, no, she's like a bird. She's covered in fur, but she's got like a bird beak. I don't fucking.
And bare breasts that don't have nipples, but are clearly, it's fucking, this movie's weird.
At least Howard the Duck had the balls to put nipples on that one duck.
That's right. You know what? I can't think of a better way to segue to the movie from nipples on a duck.
So with that, let's roll that film. So before we even start reading, I have a note,
okay,
which is having a voiceover with the words going by made me very, very, very nervous for this film. The credits start rolling of like whatever it says. Who gives a shit? If you wrote it down, I don't care.
It may shock you to know that I did not write it down. Although it does tell us where kind of, I will say that does a good job.
Oh, hey, I don't care.
Yeah.
Sure. But then when it's like, the only time that works is a Little Shop of Horrors movie. And that's because that's trying to be silly in a comedy. It starts up, it's in the 21st day of the month of September. So you hear, in the 21st day in the month of September, in a city not too far from your own. You're like, oh okay. Yeah.
Modern day.
Today.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay.
Go right ahead. The sooner we start, the sooner we're through it.
All right. Dr. Tetsu Sagawa, a researcher for the corporation Kronos, is on the run after having stolen an alien device known as the Guyver unit from Kronos. Now, you were just talking about being happy with the effects and the looks.
Well, your notes aren't in here, are they?
Okay. I just added them. Refresh your page. Sorry, I realized I hadn't done that
yet. Well, I download it from before we start. Oh, so.
Sorry.
Hold for one.
I realize.
Give your note.
Yeah. From the build of the Guyver prop to the ADR, I am not impressed with the production values of this film. This is basically like watching a Power Rangers episode. And from my perspective, that is not off to a good start.
It's true. It's not. Never mind. Who cares? Yeah. Who the fuck cares?
Oh my God. Who the hell cares?
Sagawa is caught by Lisker, the right-hand man of the president of Kronos and his thugs.
Lisker being from the original Hills Have Eyes.
Yep, the wonderful John Barryman.
Yeah, and pretty much since then, just played a creepy guy. This poor guy, I'm sure he is very nice. Otherwise, he would not have a career. But he gives me a little bit of the creep.
So Barryman has a distinctive look. He suffers from a condition that is known as hypohidrotic ectodermal dysplasia, a rare condition that leaves him with no sweat glands, hair, fingernails, or teeth. Fuck.
I noticed the no fingernails. I noticed the no fingernails later in the film.
That. Fuck.
No sweat glands. So how does he cool himself down?
I don't know, but there's a note in his IMDb page that says, despite his lack of sweat glands, he worked on The Hills Have Eyes in the desert for 5 months in heat of 100 degrees or more. I would assume
that's scary.
Well, so he, you know, he probably he radiates heat, right? He probably expels heat when he breathes, but neither of those are probably as efficient as sweating, which is why we sweat. But yeah, that's got to be tough for him.
I hope he had like a big old fan, because that's scary.
Yeah.
Because when you start to overheat and can't sweat, you start cooking your organs. And I don't know if you know this, Todd, but that's bad.
Okay. It's all right. Okay. He's parlayed this medical condition that he inherited that is incurable. He's parlayed that into a career. I mean,
yeah, fuck yeah.
You know, he has that look. Isn't he also in Weird Science with Kelly LeBrock? And he's the leader of the motorcycle gang the weird post-apocalyptic gang that shows up later. And then he's super nice. Yeah. That's probably.
Yeah. And I imagine that's how he is in real life.
Yeah.
Because when he's being mean and tough in this movie, I don't buy it. Like, I'm like, you're a nice guy in real life.
Right.
I hope he's not a dick.
Yeah. Yes. He was in Weird Science as credited as Mutant Biker.
That's rough. I bet you he did a couple trauma movies too.
He's got a lot of acting credits. He's got 110 acting credits. So
good for him.
Yeah. I'm on his IMDb page here. He was a florist before he entered the acting profession.
Wow.
If you're of an age, that is of course, he shows up in Motley Crue's Smoking in the Boys Room, the music video.
Huh. I don't remember that.
Yeah, he's the principal or whatever.
Interesting.
His first acting credit is 1975. Ooh, in a movie that is, I believe, is in the helmet. Doc Savage, The Man of Bronze.
Based on the pulp era. It sure fucking is.
Yeah. You know who else is in that movie? That 1975. Oh, there's a few. Holy shit.
Oh, no.
So Paul Gleason.
Todd, you're getting distracted.
I know.
Well, oh.
Paul Gleason.
I like Paul Gleason.
Right? He's in it. William Lucking, who is, he's kind of a that guy actor. You've definitely seen him. Did you ever watch Sons of Anarchy?
No.
Okay. You would know him. He played Piney Winston, one of the Redwood originals.
Cool.
Yeah. Okay. All right. I guess we can go back to talking about this. Fine. So, Jimmy Walker, again. So I wasn't actually sure if you would know. So I watched
Dynamite.
Good Times. Yeah.
Good Times.
Did you watch it in reruns?
No, I watched it when it originally aired.
Well, okay. All right. Okay, dickhead.
Come on, Todd.
Okay, all right.
Born in 81.
Yeah.
How would I do that?
That's okay.
It was a 70s show.
Uh-huh. Jumping ahead a little bit, but later on when Lisker is reporting his failure to the head of Kronos, this is the line. And the line that the bad guy says to Lisker.
Idiot. I'll have you slap yourself into oblivion if you don't find it.
Referring to the Geiger unit. Do you think that maybe that's an English translation of an original Japanese that just doesn't translate well? I can't imagine.
No, I just think it's shitty writing.
Oh, fuck. Okay. Well, that's what we're in for.
Yeah.
Okay.
By the way, when Lisker kills Sagawa,
yeah.
My note is I already hate this movie.
Okay, there it is.
Because it's two rubber monster suits and they are slap fighting each other. And I'm like, oh, cool.
Yeah, that's right. Lisker transforms into a Zoonoid, kills Sagawa, who was also a Zoonoid. He returns the metal briefcase to Kronos' president, Fulton Balkas.
So you already mentioned him.
Yep.
He's the guy that says, I'll slap you into oblivion. This is the most hammy,
yes,
over the top, ridiculous acting that we will ever see in any movie we do on this podcast, possibly ever.
What is this? Some sort of masochistic joke?
This guy is so bad. He's not even like Pacino hammy. He just sucks.
Yeah, you're not wrong. You are not wrong.
He's the poor man's Ronnie Cox.
Oh, Jesus.
Ouch. I did not like this guy. I would cut him from the movie. Spoilers for the end.
David Gale is the actor that you're...
Yeah, good so for him.
Oh, he is the lead in the 1985 Reanimator. He's Dr. Carl Hill.
That is a fun note about the Reanimator. The wonderful Jeffrey Combs is in that, playing Dr. West in that. And what is his name in this movie? Oh, that's right. Dr. East.
Okay. All right. All right.
I'll wait till Jeffrey Combs is introduced to
let's
gush about him.
All right.
Because, fuck, I love Jeffrey Combs.
Jeffrey Combs.
No. Don't look. Don't look. Don't worry. I've got it all set.
I don't even know who he is.
Stop looking. Don't look at the translation. All
right. Answer me now. All right. So Lisker returns the metal briefcase to the Kronos' president, only to discover that it contains an old toaster, Sagawa having hid the unit in a pile of trash before he was caught. At a dojo, Max Reed...
What the fuck is Mark Hamill wearing in this movie? That shirt he has on, like, has like a Watu entrance to it. Like, it's got a bib with buttons.
I hate to say, I mean, the 90s, early 90s fashion, not a fan.
I hate to say that, like, probably on a movie with a budget like this, it was like, hey, what do you have in your wardrobe?
Oh, 100%.
Oh, no, I think this might have been something that Mark Hamill owned.
Which, to be fair, is appropriate for the time. I mean, that's what it looked like.
Oh, boy, it's rough.
That's what it looked like. Those high-waisted pants where the belt kind of cuts, you know, above your belly button.
Yeah, and between watching this and going back to ER, man, we were obsessed with oversized coats.
Yes. Oh, yeah. Big thing.
Everybody's coat in ER is like two times too big. I'm like, what is happening? It looks like you're wearing, like, you're a child and you're wearing your parents' clothes for the first time.
Yep. So at the dojo, Max Reed, a CIA agent, notifies Dr. Sagawa's daughter, Mizuki, about the incident, while her boyfriend, Sean Barker, struggles to pay attention in class. Sean follows Reed and Mizuki to the crime scene.
Oh, wait, you had a note there.
Yeah, it was about Mark Hamill. Yep.
Oh, okay. Well, my note is...
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought that was your note. Sorry.
Nope. My note is, thank goodness David Crosby was there to break up the fight between Sean and Craig. That dude looked like David Crosby.
That's fair.
Also, Craig kind of looked like Benedict Wong.
Sure. Yeah.
Like, I was like, oh, shit, is this young Benedict Wong? And then the later scene, I was like, nope, it was just a camera angle.
Yep.
That upward camera angle on him gave him very strong Benedict Wong vibes.
Okay, Sean follows Reed and Mizuki to the crime scene.
And congratulations, this movie now takes the award for the worst ADR in a movie with Mizuki talking about...
My mother died when I was little. And as a kid, I worshipped my father. Who would do this to him?
It's fucking awful ADR. It's like Sean's hearing it from a distance, so it should probably sound like this. But instead, it's all like this. I loved my father. He was my hero. I'm like, what the...
That's unfortunate.
Audience, if you haven't figured out, I fucking hated this movie.
You have a lot of notes for a movie you hate, this much. I have far fewer notes.
Yeah, because I want to shit on it as much as possible.
Okay. I'm not into that, but okay, good for you, man. So Sean follows
Reed. This is my kink.
Don't kink shame.
Stop. My erection can only get so big.
That's right. At the crime scene, he stumbles upon the Guyver unit and stuffs it into his backpack. On his way home, his scooter breaks down in the middle of a back alley, and a gang corners him. While Sean is being attacked by the gang.
Including Craig, I think, is what I wrote then. Then I realized it was Craig, but I'm like... Is this Craig?
Yeah, that's shitty. He's like, Craig, man, what the fuck? We were just at class an hour ago.
Yeah, it like when he first sees him, he's like, whoa. I'm like, oh, is this Craig? And then like when they knock over his bike, he's like, hey, Craig, come on, man. I'm like, oh, it is Craig. Also, did you notice that his little Vespa had Harley Davidson written on the front of it?
No, I missed that.
I used to work at the UPS store in Manlius. We had a regular customer who had a Kia something, I can't remember, and I didn't look it up, but it had like Mercedes-Benz lights on it. It had the the two separate lights, and he decked it out with Mercedes-Benz He put a Mercedes-Benz logo on the top of it. I'm like, who the fuck are you fooling? This is a fucking Kia. Knock it off.
No problem. The Guyver activates while Sean's being attacked by the gang, and the Guyver fuses with him. Sean, in his newly armored form, dispatches the gang members, but is shocked by his physical appearance until the armor quickly disappears into two scars on the back of his neck.
All right, so she's not mentioned anywhere in this. How dare they? But the martial arts instructor, when she shows up at Mizuki's apartment when they're about to kiss.
Yes.
Did you catch that she's wearing a fucking Batman utility belt?
No, I clearly missed that.
It's like, oh, she's Batwoman. Oh, cool.
Oh no.
She's dead. Oh, okay. Okay. The next night, Sean goes to Mizuki's apartment and discovers his sensei. Oh, there she is. That's her.
Yep.
That she's murdered. And Mizuki abducted by Lisker's thugs. So when he walks to the apartment, there are bloody handprints on the wall. Every inch of that apartment has been fucked up. You're telling me no one in that apartment came to look at what was going on? It's a bad apartment complex right there.
Right.
Okay, so with the help of Reed, Sean rescues Mizuki before the trio are chased by Lisker and the gang of Zoonoids.
So I'm writing these notes. So again, peek behind the curtain here, right? You and I think have a similar process. We're watching the movie. We're taking notes as we're watching because we want to note things that we want to talk about later.
True.
I'm going to read to you what I wrote, and you'll hear a realization here. So my note says, "What the actual fuck?" At 40 minutes and 20 seconds, we see lights and a lighting crew member in the shot. LOL, looks like they were checking lighting with blocking and filmed it, ? The crew member is holding the light meter. And then I say, okay, that is a movie within a movie. But how bad is it that I was fully convinced that we saw a ridiculous mistake that they just said, fuck it, and left in the movie? I was 100% positive that that's what it was.
Yeah, 100%. Same. I was like, uh-oh.
Yeah.
Oh, wait. Yes. No.
Yeah, yeah. But if that had been the case, totally would have believed it.
Yeah, 100%. Commander, where are we?
We seem to be stuck in an alternate dimension. And you're no longer a captain, you're a commander.
Dear God! Are you a lieutenant? Why are you talking like that?
Oh, no, I don't know why I'm talking like that. But no, I seem to have no rank. Only the title of doctor?
I don't think there are admirals either.
Captain, I mean, commander, I mean, look, Casey, we are getting a message. It seems we have been tasked with reviewing a historical document entitled Galaxy Quest?
Then there's no moment to spare. Engage!
I don't think Night Shift Radio Legal has cleared usage of engage, so you might want to just dial that back there.
All right. Well, then I guess it's up to us to say join us over on the Where No Mom Has Gone Before podcast as we review 1999's Galaxy Quest.
Never give up. Never surrender.
Mom? They are trapped in an abandoned warehouse, but not before the ridiculous movie subplot where Jimmy Walker, Zoonoid, is incredibly racist.
Yeah, kind of racist.
Like, I was half expecting it to go over to Crafty and be like, oh, watermelon. Like, that's the level of fucking racism this movie puts on that character.
Yes, yes.
Because none of the other Zoonoids have big...
MC Stryker? Because he raps, in case you missed that. Yeah.
God damn it. Poor Jimmy Walker.
Poor Jimmy Walker.
Okay, so they're in the abandoned warehouse where Lisker and his thugs hold Mizuki captive. Sean once again transforms into the Guyver and battles them.
Now, again, this beer choice is perfect for this movie. Because if you look at the can, I mean, like, these guys could totally be the Zoonoids. But I had this realization at this scene. These Zoonoids could 100% all be He-Man villains in a live-action show. 100%.
I think we may have seen a couple of them in the horrible Masters of the Universe movie.
Yes, that's entirely possible. Yes.
Again, I would watch that again before this movie.
Yes, would watch that again. Yeah, you get Frank Langella. Yeah, absolutely. Sylvester Stallone, sure.
Sylvester Stallone?
Sylvester Stallone. Dolph Lundgren. You know, Sylvester Stallone. The power. Iconic bad guy.
Yeah, the power. Ooh, ooh. Yeah. Hey, I'm from. Ooh, I'm
I did not I'm pregame. That's tough.
Yeah, that's right. Almost it is jazz rough that gun, I like. Yeah. I was right on it. I was like, "That's he's not in that movie." See, audience, I'm not that drunk.
Not yet.
Getting there. Yep. What the fuck were we? Where Lisker's thugs hold Mitsuki captive, Sean once again transforms into the Guyver and battles them. Sean defeats the Zoonoids before squaring off with Lisker. This whole fight sequence, I'm like, we can be done. We can be done at any time.
Yeah.
During the battle, Sean executes a headbutt, which temporarily malfunctions the armor's control metal. Now knowing his weakness, Lisker and the others attempt to attack the control metal to heat Sean.
To beat Sean.
Not heat. That was not drunk. I just need reading glasses.
Yeah, got it. Fair.
During the fight, Sean kills Lisker's girlfriend, Weber. Was it Lisker's girlfriend?
Yes, it's Lisker's girlfriend. Yep. Yes, there's a moment earlier in which we see that they are clearly an item. Yep.
But the guy with the mustache and her were like, oh, let's go to Aruba. Oh, no, it is Lisker. It is Lisker. Yeah. I'm sorry. Because at first I was like, oh, that poor actor. Who's that guy actor? The one with the choker? I'm like, oh, he has no lines in this movie. Then all of a sudden he has this deep Eastern European accent. And I'm like, what? None of the rest of them have this deep European accent.
Yeah.
He's been in a bunch of stuff. I couldn't remember what I remember him mostly from, but he definitely is memorable. Sean kills Weber, but mistakenly believes he killed Mizuki as well. The Zoonoids gang up on Lisker, rip the control metal from his forehead, disintegrate the armor.
They gang up on Sean.
What did I say?
On Lisker.
They gang up on him, and Lisker rips the control metal off his forehead, disintegrating the armor into liquid and killing Sean in the process. And
movie. Oh boy, that was a great 42 minutes.
Oh. Wait, no. Oh, it's no. not?
Oh, God. Yeah. Okay.
Damn it. All right, keep Son going.
Bitch. Okay. So Mizuki wakes up at the Kronos headquarters, where Balkis shows her a gallery of Zoonoids before questioning her on how Sean was able to activate the Guyver.
So making the Zoonoids the legacy for cryptids is...
Yeah.
A choice?
Sure. I mean, okay, sure.
Sure, that was something interesting, and like pretty much, I think. Oh fuck, who directed Alien Resurrection?
Fincher?
Fincher. Oh, no, Fincher directed Alien Squared.
Oh,
who directed Resurrection? He's a French actor.
French director. Directed by. Stand by, please. Directed by Jean-Pierre Jeunet.
Yeah, Jean-Pierre Jeunet must have seen this movie and be like, I would like to be doing the same scene in my movie. Because it's so reminiscent of the scene where you see all the Ripley alien hybrids. Spoiler for a shitty alien movie, Alien Resurrection. Spoiler
for a shitty Star Trek or Star Wars movie in which the Emperor...
Oh, Snoke! Hashtag Snoke deserve better.
Yeah, sure.
Look, I'm not going to fight you on that.
Hashtag fans deserve better. Yeah,
yeah. I'm not going to fight you that Rise of Skywalker sucked.
Among others, yes, it did. It sure did.
Yeah, you know, episode 1, 2, 3, they sucked too. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's what you're talking 7, about, right?
8, 9. Yep. So, Dr. East, the head of the genetics research, discovers that the control metal is.
I'm sorry.
You had more notes.
I didn't put a note, but Dr. East, the fucking phenomenal Jeffrey Combs, who, if you saw, don't look him up. I'm going to tell you right now, Todd, look at me, not at your computer screen. God damn it. If you were watching an episode of Star Trek Deep Space Nine, that's right, he's a Star Trek actor, and Jeffrey Combs' name came up, you know it was going to be a fun episode. Jeffrey Combs holds the record for playing the most aliens on Star Trek. Huh. He played an Andorian.
Nerd alert.
Listen. Jeffrey Combs. Hang on. I'm going to look it up.
Oh, he's got a shit ton. Oh, he's especially a voice actor. He's got a lot of voice credits, I see.
Yeah, he was the second Scarecrow.
He's Kite Man in the Batman the Brave and the Bold.
Yeah, the Kite Man on Harley Quinn is so much better. Kite Man. Hell yeah.
Rat King in Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. He's Chief in DC Nation Doom Patrol. Ben 10 Omniverse. Gotham, Hulk in the Agents of Smash, Transformers, Robots in Disguise. Yeah, oh shit, he's got Star Trek Lower Decks, SpongeBob Walt SquarePants, Masters of the Universe Revolution.
All right, so here we go. So he played an unknown alien species in one episode of Star Trek Deep Space Nine. He has played the Ferengi Brunt on Star Trek Deep Space Nine, and also he played Krem on Star Trek Enterprise. I forgot the Ferengi show up on Enterprise. That's how long it's been since I watched Star Trek Enterprise. He played Weyoun 4, 5, 6, 7, and 8, which is a Vorta on Star Trek Deep Space Nine. He played a human in a fucking phenomenal episode of Star Trek Deep Space Nine called Far Beyond the Stars, where all the actors got to play human versions of themselves. It may be one of the best episodes of Star Trek, period. He got to play a Tosaki coordinator on Star Trek Voyager. I just got to that episode. He got to play the wonderful Thylek Sharan, an Andorian, blue face, little antenna on top of their head.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I remember those guys.
Yeah, on Star Trek Enterprise. And, of course, he is the wonderful Agamus, the artificial intelligence evil computer, because it wouldn't be Star Trek without an evil computer, on Star Trek Lower Decks. This guy is all over Star Trek. He was also in you just watched The Frighteners with Jack, didn't you? The Michael J. Fox movie?
We started it, and for some reason, Jack lost interest.
You didn't even get to him, though. He plays the CIA undercover agent who has been involved in every occult and, death-worshipping cult out there, and he's just covered in tattoos and scars from all these different places. Oh my. Fucking wild movie.
Oh my.
Okay, I'm sorry. Go ahead. I've gushed about the wonderful Jeffrey Combs. He was also in The Reanimator, as you said. He is The Reanimator.
That he is. So Dr. East, the head of genetics research, discovers that the control metal is regenerating itself into a new Guyver unit. Seeing Reed being experimented on, Mizuki assaults Balkis and takes the control metal, threatening to throw it into a disposal chamber. We also note at this point that Luke is back in a Bacta chamber. So,
yeah. Do you think Bacta Mark 10? Hamill was like, fucking really? We're going to do this?
Yeah.
we're doing this.
A Bacta tank with like a $20 budget.
What year was this? 93?
90, filmed in 90, releases in 91.
So 6 years removed from when the tank was
Empire's 82.
82. So 8 years removed. He must have been like, you motherfuckers.
Motherfuckers. Yeah. Good Lord. The control metal begins attaching itself to her hand, preventing it from being dropped in the disposal chamber. Striker.
Striker.
One of Lisker's goons inadvertently flings the control metal off of Mizuki's hand, and it is accidentally swallowed by Dr. East, who's in his zoonoid form at this point.
Yep.
Lisker tries to retrieve it, but East begins to frantically spasm, then dies after being cut open from the inside. A newly alive Sean bursts through East's body as the Guyver unit is actually able to not just regenerate itself, but its host as well.
And holy shit, I can't tell you how little I give a fuck about this movie at this point. was happening. I was like, I don't care. Jeffrey Combs is dead. Don't care. He was the most interesting thing in this movie.
Sure. Sean and Mizuki free Reed from the experimental chamber, and Sean once again battles Lisker and kills him as well as the other Zoonoids.
All right, look, I just said I don't care about this movie. I know how pointless this movie is at this point, but I have to point out, in the battle, the Guyver kills one of the Zoonoids by taking his elbow
blade
and slicing him in the face and killing him. Then He is fighting, I believe, Lisker.
Uh-huh.
And he elbows him twice in the back, but nothing happens. But then, 5 fucking minutes later, that's how he kills him, by doing the same move. I'm like, so we just didn't give a fuck. We just didn't give a fuck at this point. We're just making a movie. We're just making a movie and doing coke.
Yes, that is correct. You are correct, sir.
Damn it. Okay. Continue. We're almost at the end.
Before the trio proceed to escape, Reed suddenly mutates into a cockroach-esque zoonoid, but dies due to his system rejecting the new form.
All right. I truly believe this is the movie that made Mark Hamill go, maybe I should go into voice acting.
I think you are exactly correct.
I guess thank you, the Guyver, for giving us the best rendition of the Joker.
Yep. That's fair. Balkis demands Sean hand over the unit, but cannot, as he has permanently bonded with it.
Mm-hmm.
Balkis reveals his true form as the Zoa Lord and corners Sean, but the Guyver's defensive system activates the Mega Smasher cannon on his chest. those are all capitalized, by the way. The Mega Smasher cannon.
Look, I read it when I was watching the movie. I laughed as hard that I'm like, really?
I mean, it's basically Iron Man's unibeam, right?
Yeah, 100%.
The chest blaster.
It's how he takes out the Iron Monger. Yeah.
Yes, yes. And this obliterates Balkis in the laboratory. Sean deactivates the Guyver armor before he and Mizuki leave Kronos headquarters as Reed's former partner, Colonel Castle and Stryker.
Stryker.
Look on. And what does Colonel Castle say to Stryker?
I got a job for you.
And what does Stryker say back in response?
Dynamite.
Duh. God fucking damn it. And that, dear audience, thank the fucking God.
That's right.
Is movie.
Oh.
Todd.
Boy, Casey.
Todd, I hated that.
We should not ever... We should finish this and never talk of this movie ever again.
The TSPHC Army, don't watch this. I'm gonna just jump to a question we used to kind of do. Don't watch this.
Don't watch this with anyone. Yeah,
it's if a war you crime. See the if you see we were talking about covers to movies. If you see the cover for this movie, who's on the cover?
Mark Hamill.
As
you mean as
the Guyver.
He's not the Guyver.
No.
Oh.
So when Sean died, I'm like, oh, and then Mark Hamill's going to get it. But no, he just turns into a cockroach and dies. Like,
yep.
What a pointless character.
Yep.
Mark Hamill's character is. Fuck this movie. All right. Anyways. Hey, okay. Todd, we got questions. Hey, you know we do.
Yeah. You know, actually, the number one question with this movie is not a question we ask, but it's a question that inspired this podcast. And that question is, how did this get made?
Yes, I know how this got made. Cocaine. so,
yes,
Todd.
Yes,
did you even have a favorite character? Was there anything you?
No.
I
would have to care to have a favorite character. Yeah, no.
No, I'm gonna. I think this is the first time in the history of this podcast where I'm not gonna fight you on that.
You're not even naming the motorcycle, the elbow spike. Nothing.
I would rather watch an entire movie of the Captain America
motorcycle.
What's his name?
Fleeing down the highway, just the motorcycle when it goes rogue.
I'd rather watch 2 hours of that fucker just going from like New York to Chicago. Like, yeah.
Just the motorcycle. Yeah.
Fuck yeah. I'd rather company, watch this.
It meets up with Sean's scooter along the way, and it's a road movie. Then
and then they have babies. Oh.
And then they have babies. Little little. Yeah.
Fucking rather watch that than this.
I'd rather watch that.
Jesus. Was there a best scene? I'm going to go through these for us. Okay.
Yeah.
I'm
just sure.
Gonna,
yeah.
One scene you would cut the whole fucking movie, but specifically Balkis. Look, I'm hoping that guy's a very nice man, but he should not be an actor.
Mm-hmm.
Hands down.
Yes. Oh, this one. Oh, go. Okay. Good. But finally, Casey, the actor having the most fun.
Oh, Jeffrey Combs.
Oh, no.
Oh.
No, it's not. Nope.
Well, for me, it's Jeffrey Combs.
It is Sylvester Stallone.
You want to explain why you're saying Sylvester Stallone?
Is Sylvester Stallone in this movie?
No?
Exactly. He's having the most fun.
You goddamn genius. I love it. Oh, okay. Yes. All right. So, fuck. Go for it.
All right. So, Casey, we mentioned it at the end of the last episode. Do you happen to recall what the IMDb rating for this movie was?
Spoiler. It's going to be higher than the rating I'm about to give it. I think this is like a 3.
Hold on to your hats.
Oh, no.
It's a 4.9. Which summons up the incredibly sagacious coach in Bull Durham.
What's our record, Larry?
8-16.
8-16. How'd we ever win 8?
It's a miracle.
It's a miracle.
Yes. Well, good pull.
Yeah. Yeah.
What's your score? I'm going to let you go first.
That's one of my drops, by the way, now, which I've saved because it's so good. It's a 0. This movie's horrible. This movie's horrible.
I'll do you one better. This is a negative 10.
Oh,
that's right. I'm giving out negatives for this fucking movie.
We have given out zeros.
Nope. This isn't deserving of a 0.
Definitely one of the last Crow movie, I think, was a 0. Yeah, this is fair, but you went negative.
Death too soon.
First time we've gone negative.
Sure. Captain America Death Too Soon, I believe, was a 0.
Oh, I think you're right. Yeah. Yep.
Yeah, no, this is a negative 10. Oh, this movie is an abomination. I'm so glad we decided last episode that we weren't going to do the second one, because if we hadn't, I would be pleading that we weren't going to do the second one right now.
Agree. I don't think... Oh, well, you know what? The second one didn't get a theatrical release, so we were okay there.
Even if it
was a direct-to-video in the States. It was It was released in theaters in the Philippines. Yet another way we've fucked over the Philippines. But yes, so sorry, folks. Yep. So, Casey, I just want to point out. I want to point out what just happened in the last two episodes. Last episode, we watched Logan Noir, and then we watched The Giver. Could we please go back to the Logan Noir end of the pool? Please.
Yeah.
Love all that is holy.
Because right now you're going to hear somebody, I don't know, whoever Todd decides to say it, say.
And now it's time to pick the next movie from Thor's helmet.
Oh, I'm so scared. Okay, here we go.
Okay, man. Come on, you know what? It doesn't even have to be a 10. Just give us like a solid 7 movie. Oh, fuck. We didn't get it. Come on. Is it that Doc Savage movie? No.
Oh, it's going to be better than the movie we just watched. We were watching Superman 4, The Quest for Peace.
Fuck, come on. Oh, man.
I'm so excited. Look at here's the thing. After having to sit through The Giver, Superman 4, The Quest for Peace is going to feel like fucking Citizen Kane.
That's about the only way that those two movies have ever been said in the same sentence. Superman 4, The Quest for Peace, and Citizen Kane. Okay, well, let's watch that trailer.
The greatest hope against the threat of nuclear war is Superman.
I'm going to do what our governments have been unwilling or unable to do. Effective immediately, I'm going to rid our planet of all nuclear weapons.
The greatest threat to Superman is Lex Luthor.
Smarter than I thought. We can make the world safe for war profits.
He's created the ultimate weapon to annihilate the Man of Steel.
You'd risk worldwide nuclear war for your own personal financial gain. Nobody wants war. I just want to keep the threat alive.
Dude of Steel. Are you gonna get it?
You know you're a workaholic. Why don't you stop and smell the roses, huh?
Superman 4. Christopher Reeve, Gene Hackman, Jackie Cooper, John Cryer, with Mariel Hemingway and Margot Kidder as Lois Lane. Superman 4. His most important adventure, The Quest for Peace.
So I just want to point out that this is one of the movies right alongside Howard the Duck that, you know, almost wrecked this genre in the mid-80s.
You know who has a writing credit on this movie, right?
It's Christopher Reeve.
I think Christopher Reeve was doing a little...
400 years ago on the planet Earth, workers who felt their livelihood threatened by automation flung their wooden shoes called sabots into the machines to stop them. Hence the word sabotage.
Okay, look, bad, but here's the thing. We're getting it out of the way.
Done. That's, yeah, okay. Yeah, and just like this movie, right? We're done. Never going to talk about it again. Audience member, if you're masochists, I suppose you could watch The Giver.
Nope.
I don't recommend it.
Here's the thing. After watching The Giver, I'm excited to watch Quest for Peace.
That's
where I'm at. This might be a little Stockholm syndrome-y, but I'm 100% excited to be watching this over anything. Oh, God. Okay. Hey, Todd, what's the IMDb score for Superman 4, The Quest for Peace?
I'm sorry. I fell down a little bit on the job here because Superman 4, The Quest for Peace, in which Gene Hackman returns. Good Lord.
Yes.
Do you want to guess what the score is?
Well, your response makes it seem like it's probably in the 4 area.
3.7. The Giver rated 4.9.
Wait, no.
52,000 ratings, 3.7.
This is also a point where we should point out, and we'll get into it more in the next episode, that this was not technically a Warner Brothers film. This is canon. The same people that brought us Breaking and Breaking 2, Electric Boogaloo. Yep. Yep.
Oh, and Gene Hackman only appears as a voice.
He's both. He's the voice of Nuclear Man, but he is also Lex Luthor.
Lex Luthor voice.
You know who's also in this movie? A future Lex Luthor, John Cryer.
No way.
John Cryer is...
Oh, I vaguely remember that. Yeah.
Yeah, he's his cousin. Oh, boy.
Lenny.
Yeah. Lenny. Yeah. Who talks with a California accent for no reason. Hey, I'm Lenny.
So, Nuclear Man is played by Mark Pillow, a British actor.
Who has suddenly just reappeared. I fully admit, I follow Mark Pillow on Instagram.
Well, he hasn't reappeared in terms of acting because his last acting credit was 2000.
But he's reappeared. He's doing the circuit. I think he knew the Christopher Reeve the doc was coming. So, I'm not excited.
Okay.
To watch this movie. I'm going to shoot my shot. I'm going to message Mark Pillow
He's bald now.
Yeah. I'm going to reach out to Mark Pillow on social media.
How do we talk to the guy?
He didn't write it. He was doing a job. And honestly, he's serviceable as the villain.
Okay.
In my humble opinion, in my recollection of this movie.
Now, to be fair, I've not seen this movie in decades.
Yeah. So. Same.
Okay. All right. Well, let's. Oh my God. He works for Southern Glazer's Wine and Spirits now. He's on LinkedIn. Is this the same guy?
I don't know.
Kind of that bald. I think it is.
Yeah, he's bald now.
Experienced salesperson with a demonstrated history of working in the wine and spirits industry, skilled in sales, mentoring, management, employee training, and Microsoft Excel. Strong sales professional. Is that right?
I'm looking.
Is that film actor? Yes, it's him. He's on LinkedIn.
Oh, he's from. He lives in Spring, Texas.
Yep. Okay. All right.
So, Mark Pillow.
I'm
looking at pictures from the movie. If nothing else, That's a beautiful mane of hair that man had in that movie.
Sure.
Agree. Holy agree. Shit. Good for him.
That is Dolph Lundgren, He-Man, beautiful
yeah.
hair.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yep. Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
All right. Well, listen, I haven't watched this movie in decades. Maybe this movie will surprise me.
I'm going to go ahead and say.
It's not going to. Okay.
It's not fair. Going to. Okay.
Okay.
Casey, so Todd, that was a movie. For this,
yep. It sure was. And with this movie, sometimes there's music. Mm-hmm. Music for our podcast comes to us from two places. Our theme song is Take a Chance by Kevin MacLeod. You can find his music at incompetech.com. Our beer music is Feather Duster by Shane Ivers. You can find his music at silvermansound.com.
So, that'll do it for the SuperPod HeroCast for this week. With Todd Panic, I'm Casey Ryan.
For Casey Ryan, I'm Todd Panic.
Be heroic.